Ricky Miner said, Ernie, where's the didgeridoo player that you contracted? And I said, he'll be here.
Welcome to Knoxcast, Music on Music. I'm trumpeter, composer, vocalist Knox Summerhour, and this is where the world's top musicians, composers, producers, and industry professionals tell us how they've made their way in the world of music for TV, film, video games, stage, studio, and more. Today I'm honored we get to talk to multi-woodwind artist, arranger, producer, composer, and one of the busiest music contractors in Hollywood today, Ernie Fields Jr. Originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Ernie, who is better known to his colleagues as Cool Man Cool, has a music career spanning 7+ decades. He got his start playing and touring with his father's famous Ernie Fields Orchestra, and that's where we start.
So did people call your dad Senior?
No, because I just said Junior so I could enjoy the work. I could fool people.
Yeah, but you are a junior, and so when you grew up, were they called you junior or just
I just junior when I started playing, and I started going to clubs and everything.
That's good
because he was already famous.
There's a huge picture behind you that you showed me when we came in on it's a wall size picture of your dad in 1942 with his band. Younger musicians today can't imagine just big band music being the most popular. And swing being the most popular kind of music and respected style of music. What was it like growing up in that era?
You mentioned the big band era and had the styles change. And I made a note that everything changed, not only big bands, but clothes styles changed with eras and vocal styles, cars, designs. But there are different styles in the same era, like for instance, Kenton and Count Basie, you know, different styles, but in the same era. Then Glenn Miller and Jimmy Lunsford, same era, different styles. Artie Shaw and Lionel Hampton, those are all big bands in the same era, but completely different styles, you know. So the styles had nothing to do with an era, you know. But then an era that we have experienced, not you, but me, it has gone with the technique and the inventions of studios and radio stations and stuff like that, you know. But the inventions and the sounds of the electrical instruments and everything is a completely different thing from the era before then, you know. But I tell everybody my age, I say, man, we got to stop talking about these youngsters because we were just as different when we were that age. When you were 22 and 23, think about it. You know, you were doing things and the older people were talking about your dumb ass, you know.
Dad wasn't only a musician, a composer, a conductor, arranger. He also managed other artists and always seemed to have a mind for business.
But business is what you have to do when you're a band leader and you're traveling because you're doing. Back in those days, there was no managers or anything. You were the band leader. You were the manager. You were the musical director. You were everything. You know, we used to go to, because everything was broken down for colored and white. Mm-hmm. And I had a 43-passenger bus. And I would go into, my dad said, when you go into a filling station, let them see the bus and ask them if you can use the white restroom. And if they say no, drive the bus off.
Oh, wow.
But if they say, if they look at the bus and they know you got 40 gallons on both sides, they're going to say, you guys are welcome. Go in the restroom.
It's a lot of gas, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big sale.
Uh-huh.
And that was in, would have been Oklahoma?
No, that was in all the southern states. It was in Mississippi and South Carolina, North Carolina, Arkansas, Florida. That's where you travel. Like I was in the Bobby Blue Bland Review. All of those, these acts, all of these, Ike and Tina Turner. Mm-hmm. There were black joints. Colored theaters and things where we all performed.
Did you have fun doing that?
Yeah, it was work. It was work. It sounds like fun now, but it was work.
It was a lot of travel.
It was a lot of travel, and there were some very strong, good white people that made things necessary. In fact, Elvis Presley called the Holiday Inns and said, "If you don't start letting colored bands stay in there, I will not do certain things." You know,
that should happen for sure. Yeah, I heard he was a nice guy.
Yeah, some people, he got a reputation for being prejudiced, but it was completely wrong.
Oh, you don't think that?
Yeah,
was right.
somebody
planted that story.
Yeah, somebody said something nasty about that, but he wasn't. He was very cool, man. Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if you want to talk more about that, the growing up playing in that environment of segregation and all that, but you're welcome to say more about it.
No, it was different.
You've told me some stories about some folks that helped you out and some other folks that weren't so helpful.
Well, one of the stories, the band, my dad's band and the bus. The bus was during the World War II. I think it was in 1942 when the gasoline was rationed, and there wasn't enough gasoline in the bus to stay all night long because there was no hotel that would let colored people in there. Mm. So my dad went to the sheriff and asked him if he would let us stay in the jail that night. And so the sheriff said, "You niggas ain't done nothing. I can't put you in jail."
Oh, wow.
And so they went outside. Dad went outside and threw a rock through a window.
Oh, wow.
And so the sheriff came outside with his deputies and everything and said, "Okay, now which one of you niggas did that?" And so he said, "Okay, I'm putting all y'all in jail." And he did it like that, so his deputies and everything could not say that he allowed them to come to jail. So the sheriff was cool, man, cool.
After working for several years with his father's big band, his own bands, Bobby Blue Bland, B.B. King, and others, Ernie settled in Los Angeles to get involved in the busy recording scene there. I asked him about his early days in Hollywood and how he got his start recording and contracting.
Who were the music contractors in your early days in here in Hollywood, and how did you get in contact with them originally?
Well, when I came here, of course, I couldn't have been a contractor. The contractors were Ben Barrett, Stan Fishelson, Bill Hughes, John Rosenberg, and Sandy DeCrescent. I don't know who's still living, but I think Sandy DeCrescent
she's
and John Rosenberg is also, you know. But when I came here, my first gig that I played on sax was with I was hired by Fred Jackson Jr. And the first gig was at a club, and it was the horns behind Johnny Taylor, and the name of the club was A Total Experience, and it was a black club, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was on I think it was on Crenshaw, and we played behind little Johnny Taylor and everybody this 50 or under, or 60 or under or over should know Johnny Taylor. Mm-hmm. You know, he was pretty big. And my first job in L.A. after I moved here in 1973 was with Rene Hall Enterprises, and it was as a copyist. And maybe people don't know now, but I was a copyist before computers.
Right.
And if people know a score, there would be a score with pages, with instruments in a line. Like there might be 20 instruments in the orchestra, and so they would be in pencil, and I would have to write for each instrument. So he asked me, could I copy? And I said, yes. But I don't know whether people realize now, because of computers, that copying, you had to do everything. You had to write all of the notes, all of the rest, all of the everything, even the handwriting and the titles and
accidentals,
everything.
Accidentals, everything.
Everything, you know. So that's what my.
Where did you learn? How did you learn to do your manuscript and copy work?
It wasn't anything you had to learn, because I graduated from Howard University, and we had to write the stuff. I was in the house band at the Howard Theater, which had nothing to do with the university, but the Howard Theater was like the Apollo. Is in New York. The Howard was the Apollo of Washington, D.C. And there was the Royal Theater that was in Baltimore, which was the Apollo of Baltimore. And there was the Regal Theater in Chicago. And that's where all of the colored acts and the big acts performed, you know.
And this was Howard University?
Yeah, but I was in Howard University, but the Howard Theater had the same name.
I see.
But it was not associated with the university.
But you would do copy work for those guys coming through town?
I learned how to, because some of the guys that would come there wouldn't, blues singers would not have their music. So if somebody did, I would do the copying for the band. But there were other people that did that, man. You know, copying now, you think about it, is different. But then there were a whole lot of copies, because everybody had to write their music, you know.
I think it demanded more knowledge of music among general musicians. You know, nowadays we can depend so much on computers, and I think, you know, I just think the average musician wouldn't know how to copy out a part. At least in a pop band setting or something like that. You know?
Yeah, because this could get so when the copyist, when I went to a copy specialist, he showed me the pens that had things that where you could do one stroke for a quarter note and then turn the pen and do.
Fountain pen, probably.
Yes, right. Yeah, the fountain pen. But yeah. You change the
angle.
You change the angle, and you change the thing for different notes. I mean, you have your strokes for half note. You have your strokes for the quarter note, and you have your up and down strokes when you change the angle for the stems.
They were still teaching that at Berkeley when I was there, but that was a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
But you had worked with. Here in Hollywood as a copyist also, right?
Right. I started working for Rene Hall. He was on Hollywood Boulevard. And on Hollywood Boulevard, a lot of the guys that did not write music, you know, a lot of the guys would just walk by. And Rene, they would come in Rene's office, and he would record their songs. He would let them sing, and then at night he would write it down, because they had to send it to Washington D.C. for the to get it what is the word I'm looking for to get it copywritten or whatever. And so he would do it at night, and I would write it so that they could send it and get it registered. And people were lined up for that, because nobody could could write music, and they would just sing their songs, yeah. And Rene would do them and
transcribe them
and put their names on them, you know,
yeah.
So they could send them
to get them published.
Yeah, to the Library of Congress. Yeah, you asked me about some of the first contracting that I did.
Yeah.
One of the first things that I did was at the Schubert Theater, and it was Jesus Christ Superstar. And there's a good story because they had called Preston Love. The producer out of New York had called Preston Love. He was not in L.A. anymore. He was in Omaha, and so he told him to call Ernie Fields Jr. I moved here, and so he called me. And so the Schubert Theater told the guy they called, said we have our own contractor, and so. He said, but I want Ernie Fields Jr. And so they said, well, do you know he's a colored man? Did you know that? And so he said, what? He said, I wouldn't care what he is. He said, if I wanted to hire a gorilla to do it, I can. Do you understand that?
Right.
And so that was the first black contractor of the Schubert Theater that is no longer in yeah. There and
do you know where you remember what year that was?
No, it was in the 70s though.
Was that soon after you had moved to town?
No, but I had started contracting, so it was at least because I didn't. When Rene had asked me to call some musicians, and one of them said, are you a contractor? I had to call Rene back. I said, man, what's a contractor? You know, so this was after that, you know.
So you'd learned what contracting involved.
Yeah, it took a while.
What was the first live TV contest show that you worked on?
A Celebration of Black Music, and then Motown Live after that.
And on BET?
Motown Live. No, Motown Live was a network. I think it was on ABC. Celebration of Black Music might have been on BET. That was Byron Glore was the producer, and he was the first guy that hired me to get into the to do a series. And this is the person that hired me for The Voice, Anthony.
Oh.
Anthony Bargava. Thank
you,
Anthony. Oh. I met her when she was a teenager, and she hired me 20 years later.
Wow. So you never know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one of Ernie's most well-known recording credits, playing the baritone saxophone on Marvin Gaye's 1973 hit, Let's Get It On.
Let me tell you about Marvin Gaye's one of my recordings with Marvin. There were three of us there. It was myself, Charles Owens, and Nolan Smith. He's Nolan Shaheed now. But
yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it's dude, Pasadena.
And so Marvin, there was no music. We were standing there. And Marvin said, this is to give an example of the genius that he was. There was maybe a 62-inch board there. He hummed what he wanted me to play, and then he hummed what he wanted him to play, and he hummed what he wanted him to play. Then he pushed just a bass line up, and we played it. And I remember us looking at each other saying, this is utterly ridiculous. What are we doing here, you know? Then, here's a person that could not write music, but he was a genius. He pushed all these things up and then played what we played. We said, wow, you know, it was the we were part of an orchestra, mm-hmm. and he just had done just three of us, and he had hummed each part for us to play, and some of it was harmonized, wow. but he had still hummed it, and then pushed it as a part of it. So I don't think I don't know who else could have done that, you know. But that was a Marvin Gaye experience.
Work as a arranger, copyist for him?
I played on Let's Get It On,
right.
because Rene Hall did the arrangements,
right.
and I did a baritone on that, but the next, we were doing it at night, and the next, I was copying for the whole orchestra for the next day, you know. And so Rene did that for him, and he did it for a number of artists.
Ernie currently contracts for American Idol, The Voice, X Factor, the BET Awards, and many more shows and movies. I asked him what a music contractor does and what modern TV and film contracting looks like.
Well, as you know, a contractor is the business person for the musicians and a business person for the AF of M. And a business person for the production team, and a business person representing the network, you know, making sure that everybody gets what they deserve, mm-hmm. and so it's something that you everybody has to understand. It's not just for them; it's for make sure that everybody and the AF of M. loves it because they get a percentage of it. The musicians love it because they know that they're going to get the scale, mm-hmm. because it is registered with the AF of M. And the producers realize that too. They realize that they get the quality because of the contracting. And often
they don't give you very much time to find musicians.
Well, that's the voice now, because sometimes you have to find people that look a certain way too, you know, yeah. and a person that can dance like yeah. you.
I don't know about me. Not when I'm standing next to Scott Mayo, I don't look very good. You know, it depends on who I'm standing next to.
Mm.
But so they would call you, and then you'd say, I need 7 of this or 10 of that. And then for folks out there, they're listening to this and they don't know how it works. What about
some people will call and say that they want a certain amount of strings and they want them under a certain age, but they can't say that.
Ah.
They said, Ernie, you can't repeat this. But I do need some people of a certain age. And you have to understand that, and I understand it, because the people that are voting for these shows are kids and everything, mm-hmm. and they don't want to see their great-grandfather up there dancing, trying to play, you know, so.
Yeah, but I've seen you up there. I've been up there with you. You look good. Don't crack, you know.
That's because I have on a cap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's television. As you always said to me, it's television, you know. Go ahead.
You remember when I hired you to play a harp?
That was fun.
And so the people said, yeah, he might be playing the right notes and everything, but he needs to make a movement. This is a right. TV show. He needs to
right. Well, that
move his arms.
So the harp part was just like ding 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 ding. It's just like little plucks. There was no glissandi.
Yeah.
So I didn't do it. Yeah. I learned how to play what they had, because it was only two chords or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember you said that.
Yeah, they say they want to see the harp movements. You know.
So that's a good question for you, because I know you played. You have a very famous clip online you can find of Ernie playing didgeridoo on American Idol.
With Ernie on the didgeridoo, here's Come Together, courtesy of Crystal Bauer Sox, ladies and gentlemen.
As a player, what was the most interesting TV appearance you've had?
The didgeridoo was, because
yeah.
I didn't have one, but I have I can circular breathe. I had been circular breathing since I was in college, you know. And so my assistant requesting that the artist requested, that was online, requested a didgeridoo. And I said, I don't know. I asked my assistant, Debbie Chase, at that time, and she found a person from a person that was making didgeridoos here, was off of the trees that were cut out. And they had been eaten.
Oh.
Yeah, by ants. Is it termites or what?
Termites or ants or something?
Termites. They had been eaten. And so then they made the different didgeridoos. So anyway, when they asked for the didgeridoo, I went to find one. And the guy said, well, he didn't know. He said, can you circular breathe? I said, yeah. And I said, I need one. I told him the key that the song was in. And so he found that, and he sent it. And so when it was supposed to be recorded at Capitol Records on that Saturday, Ricky Miner said, Ernie, where's the didgeridoo player that you contracted? And I said, he'll be here. And I walked into Capitol Records and recorded that. And then I was on the show playing the didgeridoo because it couldn't. The next day, the New York Times, the Chicago Theater, everybody called me.
For interview or to talk to you about it?
Yeah, the didgeridoo. I said, wow, you know.
That's cool.
And there it is. And the guy said, the guy that sold it said, you sure you can circular breathe? I said, yeah, because he wanted to take the gig, you know.
Finally, I asked Ernie's advice for musicians today who want to get into recording work in Hollywood and elsewhere, and also about his famous nickname.
Things are so different today.
It's a lot different,
right? Yeah. I don't think I could advise. Things have changed. I'm contracting American Idol, and the band leader is probably your age, you know. And so when I met him and we had our meetings, and I looked at him, I said, "Listen, Chris, you know you are my boss." He said, no shit. but the thing of it is, things are different. I tell people that because there are hardly any horn overdubs and everything, and everything is done differently. The pre-records are done differently than back in the day when I was hiring you at The Voice and stuff like that, you know. And they do things. People are doing things in their garage and stuff. It just ain't what it used to be, you know. And the contracts that I do for these episodes and everything look totally different from the contracts I used to do for American Idol and for The Voice and for The X Factor and for the other shows that I've done, you know.
Yeah, a ton of them.
Yeah, and so. And so it's just completely different. And so he and I have to talk, and he tells me who's done different things so I can put them on the contract for more hours than the other thing. And we have to do music prep is a little bit different, but it is everybody has to be given credit and paid for what they do, you know. But sometimes the music prep now is not counted by sheets of paper.
Right.
Everything is counted by what the guys do and put on there. And then we have to call a music prep person to analyze it and give...
divide the measures by four or whatever per page, like 40 bars per page or something.
Yeah, whatever.
Bars. I think it benefits people that can do copy work, the fact that so many band... MDs might not know how to do that, but somebody that knows how to do arranging can come in and help them. You know?
Yeah, it can help them. But anyway, Chris is a great a great director, and he would tell me who has added and who has done, who has helped there.
That's good.
And so that he wants everybody in his band to get paid, not just for the show, but what they have done to help to put on there.
Yeah, know? Producing, because all of it counts.
Mm-hmm.
All of it counts. For those that have stuck with it and become successful, besides just talent, what have you seen that they had or did to come out on top or to succeed?
No, everybody has to change, you know. Just like a car, you know. If the gear shifts have changed, it's the same thing with music or anything. You have to be on top of the techniques of today.
And you've done it. I'm sitting here with, you got a computer, iPhone. You have two or three computers in this office.
Oh, man, you know. I don't know. I'm just lucky because I have assistants that are just great to help me, you know. Because I look at the stuff on the computer, I said, wow, what is this?
Everything's fast. Everything's just really fast, done really fast.
Yeah, the history is the main thing that because I'm not up to par with what's happening now, because I have to have younger people hip me to what's going on and what they're doing. That's right. Chris Pooley has been great in helping me with that, and all the musical directors.
Merkovich.
Merkovich has been very good, and of course, Ricky Minor, who I've done a zillion shows with.
Sure, yeah.
You know, have really, really, really helped me.
Where do you remember when you first met him, or how? Ricky Minor?
I met him when I met Ricky. I hired Ricky, and his room rent for where he was less than $150 a month. And Ricky would sit outside. I had an office on Hollywood and Vine, and Ricky would sit outside waiting to get paid, you know. Now he's richer than Country Bar. but he's insisted on me on a lot of things, you know. And also Paul with The Voice has told the producers and everything that they have to respect me for this, you know. I'm very fortunate, you know, that he realizes what we do with the track, but also he has insisted, when they insist on young musicians, he says, Ernie, I want you all to pre-record so you can call some of the guys that maybe have done these shows, that have done these things before, you know. So he's very cool, man, cool, you know.
Where does that come from? The cool man cool?
I don't know. She asked me that. I don't have a clue.
But that's your default nickname.
I know. I mean, people, you know, because I can walk out here and go around the corner and somebody's going to wave, say, hey, cool man cool, you know.
I love your attitude. I love your laid back, because I'm from the South, and we talk slow, we walk slow, and we, you know, everything's just slower, and we're cool about laid back. I love your laid back attitude about, and thank you for helping me out with this and with work throughout the years.
You promise you go learn how to dance?
I'm gonna do my best. Yeah. Next door, I think there's an academy. I need it. Yeah, I'm working on it. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Awesome. Cool, man. Cool. We were shaking hands, y'all.
KnoxCast is brought to you by yours truly. I got more great interviews lined up with some really prolific and fantastic friends, so please subscribe to KnoxCast on iTunes, Stitcher, and follow me on Twitter at TrumpetKnox for podcast updates.
You are by my side with me.
Stay tuned and stay musical.
Today.